And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is getting the most out of life. Each of my guests is helping us get the most out of working, eating, or traveling. My first guest is a life coach who taught us how to shift from a work style to a lifestyle. We discussed his ideas, the law of attraction, as we learned how to monetize our passion. My second guest is known the world over as the Galloping Gourmet. He served up new recipes and reflections on gardening from his latest book, Growing at the Speed of Life. My next guest writes European travel guidebooks and hosts travel shows on public television and public radio. He's in town for the Los Angeles Times Travel and Adventure Show this weekend. We're going to ask him for the best travel tips for Europe in 2011. As always, if you want to join in the conversation and speak with Rick Steves, you can call us at 639-0008. Rick is and advocates smart, affordable perspective to broaden your travel. He's an outspoken person on the need for Americans to fit better into our planet by broadening our perspective through travel. He's the host and writer of the popular public television series Rick Steves Europe. He is also a best-selling author of 40 European travel books. He encourages Americans to travel as temporary locals, and he helps Americans to connect more intimately and authentically with Europe and Europeans for a fraction of what mainstream tourists pay. Over the last 20 years, Rick has hosted over 100 travel shows for public television. He's on 300 stations, reaching 95% of the U.S. market in his TV series. Rick Steves is also the host of a public radio program, Travels with Rick Steves. He has self-published his first book. Now, that interested me, which is titled Europe Through the Back Door, and that book is updated annually and has been since 1980. He's a syndicated newspaper columnist, and he spends about a third of each year in Europe researching the guidebooks, filming the TV shows, and making new discoveries for travelers. Rick lives and works in his hometown of Edmonds, Washington, where his office window overlooks his old junior high school. Rick, welcome to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Bill. Good to be with you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on board, and yours is a familiar voice for anybody who loves to travel as I do. But let's jump right into it. How did you get your travel bug? How did you first start traveling to Europe?
Well, I think a lot of people got introduced to travel sort of unwillingly, like me. My parents dragged me to Europe when I was a kid because my dad imported pianos from Germany, and then we wanted to see relatives up in Norway, and I remember not wanting to go. I thought it was a stupid notion. I got over there, and like on day two, it occurred to me, this is actually pretty interesting. You know, there's different candy, different pop. I distinctly remember statuesque women with hairy armpits. And as a 14-year-old with a bad attitude, suddenly I had a good attitude. And a few years later, I realized Europe can be my playground, and I didn't need my parents to do this. And I've been spending a third of my life ever since then living out of a 9x22x14-inch carry in the airplane-sized bag. Hanging out with people who find different truths to be self-evident and God-given and really enjoying, you know, the world.
Wow. It is an amazing career that you've had. But why focus on Europe? I mean, it's a big planet out there. There's so many places to see.
Yeah, but I want to be really good at what I'm doing, and I think of Europe as the wading pool for world exploration, and it's my personal passion because that's my heritage and everything. And I'm determined to be the go-to guy for Americans who are thinking about traveling in Europe, and it's a full-time job to be up to date. That's a big beat, and you just can't be an expert on everything. And I want to really do a good job on Europe because thousands of people use my guidebooks to Ireland or Istanbul or Portugal or Greece or the Alps or whatever. And I'm pretty humble about how good the books are. I think they're, you know, you can say they're better than the other books, but they could still be a lot better yet. So my 80 employees and I do a lot of hard work just focusing on Europe. It's also a big market. I mean, you know, you could write a great book to Papua New Guinea, but it would sell in the hundreds.
Very well put. We're talking to Rick Steves, everybody. And Rick, you are being humble about the impact that your books have had. And I'm just going to pick one title, which is Rick Steves Italy. That was one of the best-selling international guidebooks sold in the United States year after year. So why is that book, or why are any of your books so popular? And in particular, what's your fascination with Italy?
Well, what's interesting is the books that beat me were guidebooks to Disneyland. So that's the big market, but I don't do Disneyland.
There's Disney Europe.
There's Disneyland in Europe, which is kind of interesting to see, actually. But Italy is my favorite place, so my passion for Italy comes across in the book. It's been a passion of mine for, you know, 20 or 25 years now to write this book, and it's the biggest, you know, it seems to be where everybody wants to go. It's our best-selling tour, it's our most favorite TV shows, and it's the guidebook that sells Head and Shoulders above all the others. Italy also needs more information because it's more complicated. A lot of people don't like Italy. My mark of a good traveler is how they like Italy. A lot of people just can't stand the, you know, they come out of Italy and, oh, it was just commotion and body odor and stray hairs and traffic jams and everybody was fighting. And I just think, well, you should go to Denmark. You know, you'll love Denmark. But I just love the commotion of Italy. Italy is a festival of life.
Well, it is. And Italy has so many different regions to it. I mean, describe a little bit more fully for my listeners the diversity that you find just in that one country of Italy.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, we offer, last year we took 10,000 people on our tours.
Wow.
We took 400 different groups to Europe, 25 people per group. And our most popular region was Italy. And far and away the most popular tour was the 12-day Venice, Florence, Rome tour. Those are the big hits. Everybody wants to go there. And Italy is very crowded, but it's crowded when you go to the famous places. I love the famous places, you know, frankly, I'd rather go to the famous places than the less famous places because they're famous for good reason. But you got to remember, everybody's going to Venice, Florence, Rome, Siena, Assisi, the Italian Riviera, you know, the hill towns of Tuscany. And then after that, it really falls off. So if you want to go to South Italy or if you want to tool around up where Italy is, you know, welded to the Alps, you can be pretty much all alone as far as tourism goes, and prices are all of a sudden half what they would be in San Gimignano.
All right. Well, now talk to me about the lake regions up north of Milan, for example. That is an underexplored area for most American tourists. Is there a lot of fascination for that region?
Oh, yeah. And one thing we got to remember is we're competing with a lot of Europeans. And, you know, Lago di Garda is inundated with German windsurfers. Germans love to go down there. It's just a couple hours drive on the freeway. And I don't like that lake as much as Lake Como. To me, I'm looking for 19th century romanticism, wisteria, old villas, you know, the memories of poets and grand,
romanticism.
Romantic era tourism, you know. And Lake Como, Lago di Como, is considered honeymoon country in Italy, Luna di Mille. And I always have to factor in when I'm doing my work, Bill, is accessibility. And it's just an hour north of Milan by train. So you fly into Milano, and then you catch the train right up to a little town called Varena, and you've got the most incredible, dramatic scenery and beautiful Italian culture with none of the intensity and chaos you'd find down in the south. So for a lot of people, it's the best of both worlds. And right across the lake from you is Switzerland. And from there, little boats go up and down the lake, and it's a beautiful way to sort of break into Italy slowly after jet lag. And from there, you can head down to Milan, which is, Italy surpassed England a little while ago in per capita income. And it's not the basket case it used to be. And it's an industrial powerhouse in the north. And that's not because of, you know, Venice and Siena. It's because of cities like Genoa and Milano and Torino. And I really think travveler's have to have a little reality in their travels. We want to see the fanciful castles and thatched cottages and little villages and hill towns. But we also should spend a day in a big modern city in each country, and Milano gives you a real good sense of successful, modern, high-powered, Italy.
We're talking to Rick Steves, everybody. Rick Steves Europe and his best-selling travel guides. Rick, in that answer that you just gave us, you know, you sort of flipped in and out of Italian, and I know that you've written phrase books. How many languages do you speak?
Well, I speak only English. It's nothing to brag about, but for 30 years I've been teaching travel classes, encouraging Americans to realize that, it'd be great to speak the foreign languages, but that shouldn't inhibit where you go. We speak the world's linguistic common denominator. If a Greek meets a Norwegian hiking in the Alps, you know, they'll communicate in broken English, and we can get away with that. So I speak only English. My kids speak French and Italian, and I'm envious. I've missed a lot because of that, but from a logistical point of view, you can go anywhere you want. I do my TV shows. I lead tours. I have great vacations speaking English. And I've been saying that for 30 years, and since then a whole generation has grown up speaking better English than ever. Now, I have my phrase books, I believe, are the best-selling phrase books in the country right now. And the Rick Steves phrase books are, I think, good because they're designed by somebody who just speaks English. And for 20 years, I struggled with the Berlitz phrase books. And, you know, I know the Berlitz people really know their languages, but they never went to a hotel where you had to ask, at what time is the water hot? You want a phrase book designed by somebody who's been struggling in a phone booth to communicate to change or confirm their hotel reservation and so on. So these books are designed by a traveler who has spent decades fumbling around with the language, realizing what do you need to communicate, and then they've been obviously translated and done all the phonetics with native speakers. And there's something, when you consider phrase books, Bill, there's two kinds. There's the practical ones that are kind of boring, and there's the goofy off-the-wall ones that are just really funny. What I wanted to do was have something fundamentally practical, but I wanted to have that goofiness in it too. So it's just fun when you're in Rome to be able to tell and you're in a taxi driver who's going too fast to be able to say in clear Italian, if you don't slow down, I will vomit.
We're talking to Rick Steves, everybody. And Rick, you're out here in Los Angeles for the Los Angeles Times Travel and Adventure Show, which is this weekend, March 19th and 20th. It's going to be at the L.A. Convention Center. If you're a travel buff like I am, this is a great place to go. Doors open up to the public 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. each day, and tickets can be purchased online. But, Rick, I'm going to ask you to open up the kimono just a little bit and share with my listeners, before you go on stage at the Travel and Adventure Show, what are some of the secret treasures of Europe that might not be well known to most American travelers?
Well, that's the big challenge for us, is to find places that are not inundated with tourist crowds. We want to go to a place where we're accepted as part of the party rather than part of the economy. I was just in Dubrovnik recently, and I was filming there, and I was all excited because it was beautiful weather, and we had our camera ready to go. And I turned the corner, and I looked at the main street in Dubrovnik, and it was a human traffic jam, inundated with tourists, because all the cruise ships came at the same time and dumped all their people out on that little town. And it occurred to me, for 8 hours that day, the city was a zoo. It was a hellish, crowded mess, and 98% of the Americans that saw Dubrovnik that day saw it in that state. Now, we went inland and filmed something else, and we came back at 4 or 5 o'clock. Everybody was on their tenders back to their cruise ships, and suddenly Dubrovnik took back its beautiful charm, and we filmed some beautiful stuff in the last 4 or 5 hours of daylight that day when everybody was back on the boat. We have to make decisions in our travels. Are you going to go to the same places at the same time as everybody else, or are you going to go to places that are kind of quirky and offbeat, or are you going to do things at a different time, do things off-season? My feeling is there's a lot of crowds and a lot of lines in Europe, and there's two IQs of travelers, those who wait in lines and those who don't wait in lines. If you're waiting in a line, frankly, you're screwing up. Your time's valuable, and you could have gotten around that line quite easily. I find there's a lot of little beautiful little villages and towns where the traditional lifestyle is surviving vividly in the less famous corners of Europe and in the less famous countries. So what you want to do is balance your trip. You can be in Salzburg and complain about the crowds, and the next day you can go on the Sound of Music tour. That's not doing a good job of getting away from the crowds. You're going to be rolling through the foothills of the Alps with 40 Japanese tourists singing Doa Deer. what I think you should do is, head south for a couple of hours and find yourself in a little village immersed in Salzkammergut Lakes District charm, and commune with nature with local Austrians instead of a lot of international tourists in Salzburg. That's what I'll be talking about at the show. I'm giving my talks down there, and people can go online and see my talks if they just Google Rick Steves and look for my lectures on video or go to our website. But, the more I teach my class, the more I realize I'm just encouraging people to equip themselves with good information and expect themselves to travel smart, and they can. You can be your own tour guide and enjoy a heck of a trip in Europe, even without crowds and even on a surprisingly reasonable budget in 2011.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up seasonality. Is there one season or a time that's better than another to visit Europe? We hear about the shoulder seasons all the time. Are they good?
Yeah. Well, I've for 30 years I've had the same routine, or for 25 years now. I spend April and May in the Mediterranean. Then I go home in June, and I spend July and August north of the Alps. And I would say the most grueling thing about European travel is the heat and the crowds of summer in the famous and hot areas in the south. It's brutally hot in the Mediterranean region these days, and you should avoid the summer if you can. I've traveled there in the summer, and you can have a good time, but it's a lot more enjoyable, I think, in the shoulder season from a crowds and from a heat point of view. Now, in the north, Bill, in Ireland, Britain, Scandinavia, you want peak of peak. You want long days, you want good weather, and there are never any crowd problems in those countries. So, in fact, no crowds is a problem in Scandinavia because things are just deadly. They shut them down or they're just like desolate. You want to have a little bit of color and festivity out in the streets. And in those sparsely populated parts of Europe, you want to be there in July and August. I think if you're wondering if you and your partner can do this, what's the most grueling thing about European travel? It is the heat and the crowds of summer. Bundle up, go in April or October. Off-season travel to me is a beautiful thing. I love to go to Europe in the winter, just going to one great city for a week. Cheap airfare, get a good hotel, settle right in, And the cities, I think, are better in the winter than in the summer because they're geared up for the local culture scene instead of the tourist culture scene. The four big cities in Europe that really merit a week, as far as I'm concerned, are London, Paris, Rome, and Istanbul.
And Istanbul, then there's a sleeper. We're talking to Rick Steves, everybody, who's here in town for the Los Angeles Times Travel and Adventure Show. That's March 19th and 20th at the L.A. Convention Center. And we're getting some insight, some real good tips on European travel. Rick, in about the 30 seconds that we've got left, if I had to pin you down, if you were forced to leave the United States and live somewhere in Europe, where would that be and why?
I hate that question. I can't answer it because I wouldn't want to live in any one spot. I've got enough money to buy a little villa in Tuscany or something like that. But for me, the real luxury is traveling around. I love the south coast of Portugal. I love cruising the fjords of Norway. I love exploring Bulgaria and former Yugoslavia. I love side tripping into Morocco. I love to be on the west coast of Ireland, gazing out at the Atlantic with somebody who says, the next parish over is Boston. You know, there's so many fun things you can do in Europe, and the beautiful thing from an American point of view is you can pick and choose.
Oh, that is great, and you make it sound so amazing. Rick, if people want to learn more about you, want to learn more about your guidebooks, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, thank you for asking. Just go to ricksteves.com. I would mention just this week we've debuted our new app, and it's in the App Store at iTunes, and it's entirely free, and it organizes all 5 years of my radio archives and all my guided tours in country-specific playlists. So people can just download it, take it to Europe, and they have all that information to help them out. Of course, all my guidebooks and our tours and our TV show and radio show are explained at ricksteves.com.
Oh, Rick Steves, there's an app for that. Rick, thank you so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure.
Happy to. Thank you.